troops would find out in an instant and descend on the flanks and rear of the attacking party.
So, which group do we go for first?
Siowa asked, falling into the same trap that those in the future would. We split up, Nick answered. We need to hit both at the same time. What? Are you serious? Alan asked in surprise. Splitting up doesn't provide any inherent advantages. Quite the opposite.
I'm with Alan on this one,
Siowa admitted.
It doesn't make any sense. We're supposed to be dividing and conquering them, not dividing ourselves and getting conquered. We're only splitting up because we can handle it,
Maria insisted.
This is Nick. He obviously wants to train us, and fighting one group at a time wouldn't be the challenge we need. Let's do this!
Alan looked befuddled at Maria's sudden trust in Nick. Weren't you just worried about traps and stuff?
Yeah. Well, maybe slave driver Nick worked us like dogs to the point I forgot what it's like to even have a hobby, and I just want to believe it wasn't for nothing, okay?
Maria retorted. It's good you're enthusiastic. Your team can take on the archers over the hill. Given how defense-oriented your team is, you should be able to handle the push north with less concern, especially if you're not having to watch the squishes, as you called them. The rest of us will go fight the large group of skeletons preparing an ambush, Nick ordered. Form up and let's head out. But what about the risk? Don't we have to worry about— A giant medicine ball struck Alan in the gut.
Ow! What was—
You heard the raid leader! Go! Go! Go!
Elizabeth shouted as her medicine ball returned to her hand. Within less than a minute, Maria's group was marching north straight at the archers, leaving Nick, Sioa's group, and Reggie's group to head east toward the enemy's melee contingent. Spencer, we're going to need cover fire for the archers one way or the other. Can you tackle that now? Nick asked as the group picked up their pace. Got it, Spencer said, beginning to work on his spell without even dropping behind a step as they marched at double speed toward the enemies. There was a whistling sound, and another volley of arrows came down, but only a few arrows got through the branches they hid beneath, and only one hit Christina's shield while two struck Topaz's. The next moment, Spencer finished his incantation. Dark clouds formed above the archers and a lightning storm erupted. The wind picked up. Streaks of electricity cut through the sky, striking the archers' location. Alan, now that we've got a little cover, we're going to need eyes on the other team and scouting potential as soon as possible. So can you get your drone and get back here before we reach the enemy encampment? Nick asked as he looked over in the distance, spotting Alan's drone pinned against one of the trees, two arrows locking up the blade so it couldn't move. Alan didn't even reply as he took off like an arrow before Nick could even caution him to take a shield or use a backpack as cover. With the spell cover in place and Alan working on getting their visibility back online, the guild came face to face with the melee contingent of about 50 skeletons Andrea had warned them of. However, it wasn't 50 skeletons. Instead, it was 4 ectoflesh fiends, about 30 skeletons, and around 20 ectocrawlers. The ectoflesh fiends were piecemeal abominations that stood a foot and a half above most men. Their bodies weren't solid because they were an amalgam of limbs held together by a giant ball of ectoplasmic energy at their cores. These fiends were what happened when the ectocrawlers, ghostly green spectral enemies that took the shape of people from the top up and crawled across the ground biting and clawing at anything they could reach, managed to kill people and absorb the flesh of their bodies into their own. The larger the ectoflesh fiend, the more kills the creature had. Each incorporated arm still held the weapon it was holding at the moment of death.
That's not skeletons. I was hoping for skeletons.
Topaz remarked as she pulled out her large grenade launcher and started to redo her ammunition choices, swapping out the black grenades for gray ones as quickly as she could while everyone else formed up, standing a field opposite from the enemy contingent. As Nick stared at the large force of enemies atop the hill across from him, he switched out his spear for an item he'd brought along for just such a situation. A large pike appeared in his hands, and he stood it up vertically. The attached flag, with a picture of a flat bench with racked weights embroidered on it, fluttered in the wind kicked up by the storm. The standard of greatness that Nick had received after the dungeon outbreak in Rome enhanced a group's attack damage and defenses at the cost of reducing the holder's attack power by 75%. But that reduction was more than offset by the boost it provided to those within 10 meters of him, increasing all damage done by allies within that range by 15%. Furthermore, for each ally or party member who had complete trust in Nick, the weapon granted an additional 10% damage bonus, capping at a remarkable 200% potential damage. While the item left Nick completely weak and nearly powerless in the fight himself, it was basically a guarantee in improving everyone around him. Activating his pep talk skill, banner in hand, he shouted out to his comrades,
"Prepare for battle! Shields up! Formations tight! Topaz, lay down the gas!"
A magical glow seemed to spread from the standard and envelop his team. Topaz fired off several shots following Nick's command as the battle erupted. Nick, standing behind the forces, watched as two canisters fired in rapid succession struck the ecto-crawlers 200 paces in front of them, triggering an enemy charge. Meanwhile, the canisters began spewing out a thick, heavy gas so quickly it nearly instantly covered the entire area in a fog that Nick knew was corrosive and poisonous to the monsters ahead of them, draining them of their unholy energy and sapping their strength.
"That's all I can do. I only found one type of poison fog that works on the undead,"
Topaz explained apologetically to Nick as she switched back to her sword and shield seamlessly and took the front line next to Sioa and the three shield warriors from Reggie's group.
"Hold your ground," Nick commanded,
feeling like the Roman generals in the movies he saw as a kid as he drove the standard of greatness into the ground, the glow around his team persisting even as he let go of the pike and equipped his spear, Poisonous Spear of Returning. A holy weapon able to poison fiendish, unholy, undead, and demonic creatures. By then, the monsters had already managed to shorten the distance from the 200 paces to 100, moving at a quicker and quicker speed as they got closer.
"Spencer! Adele! Reggie! If you're going to do something, now's the time!"
Nick called out as he threw the spear at the monsters, trying to hit one of the ectoflesh fiends in its core. The spear hit its target, striking the closest ectoflesh fiend in its arm.
"Back!" Alan notified Nick, drone in hand. He put down the device and moved to the flanks to prepare for the engagement. While Alan was moving to position, Reggie's defensive spell went off, covering the whole ground in the familiar orange glow, letting them all know that they could withstand a single hit without getting hurt or having their armor damaged. On top of Reggie's spell, Adele's own divine magic came to life in the form of a radiant banner that spread out, surrounding the whole group with a bright white light. Not to be outdone, Spencer followed up their visually showy spells with one of his own, channeling a burst of lightning from his fingers that struck the nearest ectocrawler. The bolt then arced to another five monsters, killing the first two and wounding the remaining four. The spells didn't stop the enemy advance, though, as they closed the remaining distance with even greater speed, determined to crush Nick and his group beneath their numbers. As the enemies finally reached them, the white light of Adele's spell showed its might, igniting the unholy abominations into an even brighter white fire as it burned the first seven ecto-crawlers, four of them being the ones that Spencer had already injured, to a crisp and forced the enemy charge to come to a halt, fearing the consecrated ground Adele had created with her divine energy. Rose a cackle from behind the enemy forces as the gaunt skeletal rider from earlier emerged from Topaz's poisonous fog in the distance, his bones now black and marred from the damage of her gas.
"What is he doing?"
Siowa asked as she and the other melee fighters watched the skeletal rider in the distance tear off his own skull, raising it high above his head. Nick recognized what was happening from their research on the dungeon's monsters and threw his spear at the now headless commander. However, before the spear could reach its target, the rider had thrown his skull at the group. Even as the spear struck the rider in the chest, finishing him off nearly instantly thanks to Topaz's poison already leaving his bones weak and brittle, the skull was already transforming. It glowed bright green, growing larger as it shed its corporeal form, the bone evaporating and leaving behind only a large ghostly skull that looked like it would swallow Nick and all of them whole if it could traverse Adele's consecrated ground.
What do we do?
Noelle panicked as the ethereal skull flew toward them.
Nick, boss, what do we do?
But before the skull could reach them, it stopped, smashing into the ground with its mouth open as it chomped down and consumed the entire skeletal backline of the enemy army. As it did, the skeletons it ate turned to dust too, their bones evaporating into the air as they turned into the same burning bright green energy as the skull before scattering across the ground and pushing in toward Nick's group. The glowing green fires made from the energy of the skeleton smashed into Adele's consecrated light, and then after a moment of battle between the two magical forces, Adele's holy barrier was shattered, and the radiant light faded away entirely. At the same time, too, every one of the crawlers and flesh fiends within the green fire looked like they had been healed,
the damage from Topaz's fog evaporating as they grew larger within the flames before the green fires, having buffed up the monsters, finally dispersed.
"Don't just wait there! Charge in! Buy Azel time to get another cast off!"
Nick ordered as he made a gesture with his hand, returning his spear to his side. He lunged across the 8-foot gap separating the two groups and stabbed at the nearest monster, watching it writhe and die before it could react.
"My life fire!"
Christina yelled, making a completely random and unexpected StarCraft reference as she, Siowa, and the others charged into the fight too, stabbing and gutting the nearest ecto-crawlers. As Nick watched a large spiritual hammer smash one of the ecto-flesh fiends into bits and a burst of chain lightning smash into another one before electrocuting several nearby ecto-crawlers, one of the two remaining flesh fiends attacked him. The monster's floating, erratically moving limbs made it nearly impossible to stop as its arms, each holding a different weapon, smashed into Nick's shields like a hurricane. It felt like he was training against Mr. Walters as the speed and repetition of the blows kept him moving his shield back and forth to divert the force from each attack. He backed up, not wanting the monster to fully descend upon him. "Freaking hell," Nick muttered as he tried to stab back at the creature, only for each attempt to be met with a strong downward attack from a mace, a sword, or another weapon as the limbs continued to spin and the monster's attacks quickened.
"Need help?"
Siowa asked as her spear caught one of the mace blows that was about to strike his shield, and then Reggie's flaming Zweihänder took advantage of the gap as he cut through the newly formed opening in the tornado of weapons and sliced at the monster's core, killing it on the spot.
"Thanks. But what about the others?"
Nick asked, turning to look at the rest of the battle. It had only been a moment, but he saw that it was already over. The ecto-crawlers were all dead beneath the weapons and magic of his teammates. Topaz, Winter, Alan, and Robert standing over the corpse of the other ecto-flesh fiend.
"They're doing well,"
Diawa commented with a smile, looking rather proud.
"Almost like they had a good teacher."
"Well, don't celebrate too much. Is the drone up? How are Maria and the others doing?"
Nick asked as he looked over at Alan, who had already gone from fight to drone flight, his screen up invisible as he piloted the device over to where Maria's group had engaged the archers.
"They're doing well. It looks like their fight has just started,"
Alan answered as he angled the feed so Nick could watch easily too. Nick came up behind his friend to look and saw that Alan was correct. Maria led the charge while Andrea and Tabitha flanked her, their weapons at the ready as they ran towards the group of archers. The remaining two archers, Joe and Daryl, lagged a little behind, creating a V-shaped formation for the charge. Even as the archers continued firing, the arrows failed to get past the well-trained shields of Maria's team as she and her companions descended upon them. They pushed through the first line of skeletal bowmen with ease, knocking them to the ground with their shields and hacking through bones with their swords. Andrea and Tabitha took some arrow fire, but their shields held up against the onslaught. They closed in on the remaining archers, knocking down the first skeleton each of them ran into and stomping on their skulls before lunging out with their weapons at the next nearest enemy. Daryl and Joe followed suit, shattering and smashing a few skeletons, while Maria herself activated one of her hero skills, Power Strike, and created a massive orange blade out of aura that cut horizontally through several of the archers in one swing. Following Maria's example, the other two girls continued to push through the clump of archers, breaking their ranks as Daryl and Joe fanned out and flanked the remaining skeletons, herding them back toward Maria, Andrea, and Tabitha to be finished off. Maria, finishing off the last skeleton and wiping her brow with the back of her forearm, noticed the drone above watching them and waved. Then, everyone's wristbands glowed, and they got the notification of XP for finishing the group, several people smiling as they quietly mentioned new levels. The XP gained reminded him to check his own status.
Name, Nick. Class, Trainer. Level, 28. EXP to next level, 649 out of 10,050. HP, 680. Mana, 170. Unspent stat points, 0. Strength, 43. 58 minus 29 plus 14. Agility, 66 plus 14. Constitution, 68 plus 14. Aura, 26 plus 16. Magic, 34 plus 11. Charisma, 179. 150 plus 29.
"We should join them," Nick said, noting just how close he was to his next level as he picked up and stored the standard of greatness. "Alan, Can you have your drone follow us and warn us if it sees any monsters?
Alan nodded, pressing some buttons on the controller in his hands before putting it away. The drone returned to them and hovered above them about 200 feet in the air. The group then moved quickly to meet their other half. Soon Nick could hear his friends and guildmates.
Oh, you finally made it? I thought we'd have to break for lunch or something.
Maria teased Nick, Sioa, and the rest of the group as they came into view.
Are you really going to act like you finished first when we're the ones that had to come meet you?
Alan shot back, looking like he was more than happy to challenge Maria on the topic, even as Nick just rolled his eyes.
Hey now, if the woman wants to talk about taking a break to cook us lunch, I'm fine with that.
Reggie laughed as he started bending over to pick up arrows and weapons littered across the ground in front of them. Robert frowned at his group leader.
Really? Are you really going with the whole woman make me a sandwich joke?
As Reggie continued to loot the battlefield, carefully breaking each arrow to separate the wood from the metal, he looked over at Robert.
I wasn't joking. I could definitely use a sandwich, so if you're offering to do it instead, I won't say no.
I'll take one too while you're at it.
Topaz chimed in, sealing Robert's fate.
Me too.
Siowa added quickly. Elizabeth nodded.
Two for me. Add bacon.
What? How did I get stuck with sandwich duty?
Robert looked utterly confused at his situation.
And you didn't even do anything, Elizabeth!
I had to keep my opinions about your sloppy form to myself. That was a lot of work.
Elizabeth dryly replied, her monotone voice as she delivered the response causing Nick to chuckle. While Robert begrudgingly searched for the pack with food in it, Topaz and Adele moved through the groups, checking everyone's health and stamina, as well as using pills and magic to make sure they were all ready for the next fight. As they were all settling in to relax and enjoy lunch, a beeping from Alan's drone controller drew Nick's attention. The drones detected movement to the north, Alan reported as he tossed the pad to Nick. Nick acknowledged the information with a nod, but he didn't see anything on the screen outside of the area's topography. We all prepared to go? Ready for the next fight? Nick asked the raid group. Sioan nodded, Reggie gave a hearty, Of course! And Maria gave a thumbs up, letting him know everyone was good to go. Then, with a loud commanding voice, Nick ordered,
There are more enemies to the north. Maria's team will take the vanguard this time. Sioa's team can stay in the middle, and Reggie's group will be our rear guard.
After we eat, though? Reggie asked.
Oh, of course. After lunch, Nick answered with a nod before turning to Robert and asking, How are those sandwiches coming along?
Robert, looking like he wanted to reply with an I hate you guys, begrudgingly answered,
I finished Elizabeth's and Topaz's first. I'll get to yours next, boss.
Good man,
Nick replied, turning back to Reggie.
I guess we got more time to loot. Not if she beats us to it,
he said, pointing over at Adele, who, with a giant bag in her hand, was sweeping the battlefield of any loot.
Oh, that's a priest for you.
Nick laughed before turning his thoughts to the battle they'd just won and the guild's performance. He knew the fight hadn't been without complications. He still needed to talk to Andrea about the sloppy inaccuracy of her 50 skeleton scouting report. That mess-up could have easily cost them their lives in a fight with higher stakes. But for the moment, he didn't want to bring down the mood, nor did he want to call someone out in front of their peers. Humiliating people in front of their colleagues would only breed resentment and potential future failure. Chapter 10.
I feel like we should have hired a porter,
Reggie complained as he readjusted the giant sack of materials on his back. It seemed that for every 300 or 400 feet they moved west, there was a new enemy force to fight, and the moment it was over, the guild members descended upon the remains, picking apart the corpses of their foes with the efficiency of piranhas trying to get every ounce of meat off a dead cow.
Why would I hire a porter when this is good exercise for everyone?
Nick replied, a smile on his face as he patted Reggie on the shoulder.
You got this. Just think of it as leg day and back day, all in one.
Forget working out. I'm just thinking about the cut of this you'll let me take home and how long it will last the church. They've been trying to save up to build an extra apartment complex to handle the wave of migrants after the enclave of the Whispering Shadows dungeon break destroyed half of the homes in Penrith.
Adele said.
Oh, yeah. Where'd they even get the money to start that project? I thought they were going broke, right?
Reggie asked as the group continued their march.
Magical gold donations from generous rich people?
Adele answered, beaming at Nick, as if he had been the one to drag a giant bedsheet through the vampire's castle and collect every piece of gold that could be found.
I forgot about Penrith,
Siowa muttered with a sigh. Everyone's footsteps seemed to slow down as the heavy subject was brought up. Despite Nick's watchful and protective measures keeping the actual city he lived in safe, making things there feel like business as usual, there was more than one city in the country that had been ravaged by a breaking portal, a fact that Dungeon Safe Insurance had used to drive up their profits since Nick had last dealt with them.
Well, the church hasn't forgotten,
Adele assured.
And they're taking every step they can to build housing for the displaced people that came our way.
That's good to hear, Nick remarked. But he was also shamelessly wondering how many refugees would be able to take part in defending against the apocalypse to come, and how he might go about recruiting them. He didn't know how it would impact his guild's public image if he went around knocking on the doors of refugees from other towns and going, "Would you like to fight the demons that invaded your land? Then step right up, soldier."
Well, looks like we're going to have even more enemy-donated materials for your church just ahead of us, Alan said, interrupting the chatter as he showed Nick the screen on his drone. While they had marched, he had taken over the scouting duties, using his drone to sweep the area in front of them and look for any potential threats. There, in front of the camera, was a run-down medieval city, and the place was clearly haunted. One building in particular that looked like an abandoned temple was the most active. Exiting the temple was a steady stream of ghostly figures, each looking like a medieval swordsman, pikeman, or knight. At the same time, what looked like the ghosts of regular peasants were seen carrying body after body into the temple, armor and weapons still on the corpses.
Holy crap, it's like an entire village of undead,
Maria said as she hovered beside Nick and Alan, trying to get a peek at the camera. Nick glared at the monitor.
Yeah, more than just a village. That's a whole city's worth, it seems. And every moment we delay, they're adding more and more troops to their forces.
It's creepy. How are they carrying corpses?
Maria asked.
Aren't they just, like, ghosts? How do ghosts carry corpses?
They aren't the go-through-doors kind of ghosts. They're basically just people, only their touch will suck the life force out of you, they don't succumb to cuts or bruises, and they never tire, Nick explained. They're basically like perfect unkillable zombies, and they're capable of thinking.
That does not bode well. How are we supposed to beat that many of them, then?
I still have the unholy energy-sapping fog canisters,
Topaz suggested as she loaded them into her chambers.
As long as we don't see another creepy skeleton mount capable of destroying and dispersing the fog or removing Adele's consecrated land, shouldn't we be able to handle them all? I don't have that much mana left,
Adele said sheepishly as she raised her hand like she was in class.
I can't use the same spell again.
Well, that's fine. Spencer's lightning and ice spells will at least...
Topaz confidently turned to Spencer, only to see him shaking his head.
I'm almost out as well. The most I can do is burn 10 or 20 to a crisp. I've got no wide-scale magic available,
Spencer admitted as the group's march came to a creeping halt, everyone confused about what to do.
Reggie, you out of blacksmith magic too? Nick asked, already guessing the answer.
No more flaming weapons or magic shields?
Yep. Been out for 2 fights now, Reggie answered with a frown.
I didn't expect we'd run into that many, to be honest.
Nick wanted to smack his head as he looked at the group.
Well, at least we got Topaz's gas canisters to make them weak.
And the stimulant pills,
Topaz added as she produced a handful of them.
They won't last that long, but you know how good they are at speeding you up and giving you that extra oomph.
Let's also not forget that, while our casters aren't as trained in weapons as the rest of us, they've trained their muscles just like we have, Alan said cheerfully.
And there is, what, 16 of us? We can do this, so long as you don't make us split up again for training.
Yeah, come to think of it, this lack of mana is really Nick's fault. If we hadn't split up as often as we have, we'd have a lot more mana,
Maria remarked, laying the blame at Nick's feet. Siowa nodded in agreement.
This is why they taught famous defeats in detail in class, by breaking apart large groups into smaller ones.
Okay. Enough lectures, Nick said, silencing the group and avoiding a history lesson he was already too familiar with. If you want to complain about how I do things, you can do it over a smoothie at the gym. For now, we're going to finish this mission and return victorious.
Without any casters? Arnold blurted out.
He had mostly remained silent as he watched over the teams, but now even he was openly doubting their capabilities.
What do you mean without casters? Only 3 people have told me they're out of mana. I still have 12 more with full tanks, don't I?
Nick said, looking over at the rest of his guild.
None of you burned up your mana, did you?
Boss, I hate to be the one to break it to you, but I don't really have mana. I'm not a caster, Robert answered as he joined in on the conversation. Winter looked a little confused as she said.
Yep, me neither.
What do you all mean you're not casters? Don't we have the top magic training facilities? Don't you all spend an hour a day there practicing the magic from the 2 spell books, the ice magic and holy fire?
Nick demanded, his expression quickly turning from curious to a feigned anger as he followed up by asking,
You're not just slacking off in there, are you? You're not goofing off when there are still hours in the day to work out, are you?
Yeah, but I don't even have 15 magic yet. No matter how much I practice, that number doesn't really go up. And that's with me practicing the mandatory hour a day in the evenings.
Noelle explained as she looked to the others for support on the matter, everyone nodding.
I have 16 magic.
Andrea seemed to brag, not at all ashamed of the amount.
But you do know how to cast a spell, and you do have enough magic to at least do it once, right?
Nick pressed, trying to remind them that while they usually only use their spears, swords, and shields in battle, those were not the only tools at their disposal. He had gone out of his way to make all the resources he could available to everyone so that there would be no weak links in the coming apocalypse. Casters running out of mana happened a lot as engagements became increasingly frequent and prolonged in the apocalypse, and if the warriors and fighters couldn't pick up the slack and use area of effect abilities, then there would be nothing but death awaiting the front line.
Yeah, we can do it.
Maria was the first to agree with him.
I've only been using aura this whole time, and while it takes a lot out of me, my magic supply is fine. I've gotten a lot better with holy fire. I'm good to go.
Siama said proudly.
You guys have been practicing it too, right?
That spell is mean.
Adele pouted as she still hadn't gotten it to work properly.
It's okay, Adele, Nick replied, trying to comfort the sulking woman.
I swear, I'm a good priest.
She grumbled again before Siowa was able to pull the conversation back on track.
So, what's the point? You want us to all burn our magic in the next fight? Even though we're nearly a 100 stat points less powerful than our actual dedicated casters? Robert asked.
Why not? I can't get the holy fire to work any better than Adele, but I've got the ice magic down. I can even throw spikes harder than a fastball, Daryl bragged.
All right, so is that the plan? A Song of Fire and Ice, the Undead Battlefield Edition?
Maria asked.
How are we supposed to use the spells to handle this situation?
Well, that's the thing. We can't actually handle this many enemies on our own because they'll swarm us, overwhelm our flanks, and kill us from behind. Even with 16 of us here, there is no way we can hold a steady front.
So? Nick paused as he looked at the feed one more time to be sure of what he was about to say.
We will need to use the ice to bend the terrain. We need to make a path from here, he pointed at an opening to the village from the woods, to here.
He dragged his finger to the temple, carefully tracing it along the route so that at all times the group would be able to take advantage of the sides of buildings properly, shoring up at least one flank with the town's natural formation.
Once we get there, we can take out what is summoning more specters and then start working on the remaining ones until they're all defeated.
So, you want to form ice walls where the open flanks are, block the enemy from attacking our sides, and push through the middle?
Sioa seemed to read Nick's mind as she bent over where they had stopped and started drawing the village on the ground.
If we can reach this point, then we'd only need 5 good casts to protect our flanks and get through to the temple. There's 13 of us that still have mana. Everyone here knows ice magic well enough to form a frozen wall, at least. The plan is sound.
Indeed. But if we're going to do this right, we need to also switch up the formation a bit. Even though they're the weakest links in a physical confrontation, we need to move the mages and casters that can't use their magic anymore to fight. We'll need our new adept melee casters on the flanks to keep the ice walls up, Nick said, scratching at his head a moment as he tried to picture it coming to life,
wishing that the chilling ice magic had been a universally available thing in his last life, too, wondering how much easier fights would have been if that were the case.
Hey, who said I can't use my magic anymore? I just said I was nearly out.
I still got one spell left in me, Spencer explained, defending his ability.
Then use it when it counts, Nick replied. As for the rest of you all, consider this your first proper training as battle mages. Who knows? You might find you're rather good at it.
Chapter 11. Once they were ready to move, Nick pulled out his banner, the Standard of Greatness, as the rest of the team equipped themselves with swords, spears, and shields. Even though they knew what they had to do, had a solid plan, and had the Walters there to potentially intervene, it was still a nerve-wracking moment as they stared out at the undead village in front of them. His eyes fixed on the open gate entrance on the east side, an ominous threshold leading into the heart of the enemy. His Hound of Helsing title flared, and Nick could smell the sulfurous rotting of the undead as they approached. He turned and saw Adele wrinkling her nose, her matching title no doubt giving her the same warning. Beyond it lay the rest of the village, a collection of small buildings with ghostly soldiers surrounding them, seemingly going about their daily lives. As his gaze shifted northwestward, his eyes caught a glimpse of the largest structure in the village over the roofline of the small buildings, the temple that they'd seen from Alan's drone. They planned to skirt north, then go west through the gaps between the buildings to get as close as they could to the temple before they were spotted. From Alan's drone feed, he'd seen that the bulk of the undead were gathered on the west side of the village near the temple, but it was the largest number of enemies Nick had fought in this life to date, and the sight was still intimidating.
No matter how you do, know I'm proud of you, Mr. Walters said as he put a hand on Nick's shoulder.
Nick looked up at the man, who had been a silent sentinel the entire trip, a giant muscular guardian as he watched on with his daughter and son, protecting the party.
Thanks, he replied, seeing the truth of Mr. Walters' words in his eyes. That means more than you know. Now go show those skeletons the proof of your faith, that your prayers to the Altar of Steel have been heard, and that your flesh is ready to carry the burdens of battle with ease.
Mr. Walters continued, taking his hand off Nick's shoulder as he backed up and just gave an awkward, toothy grin and a big thumbs up. The sight of Mr. Walters in that goofy pose cut all tension Nick had been feeling about the upcoming fight, and taking a deep breath, he steadied himself and prepared for battle.
Standard pace! Advance! Nick ordered. Noelle, Winter, Christina, ready yourselves. You'll be up first. Christina, you build the wall behind us so we don't get flanked from the rear. Noelle will build the left flank, and Winter will build the right one. Andrea, Daryl, get ready. You'll be up next.
With that, the guild formed up, Nick in the center, and began to advance as quietly as they could. The raid group was able to get halfway to the first choke point, a gap between two ruined stone buildings, before the stench of the undead assaulted Nick's senses again, and the unholy ghost army detected them. The moment they did, the specters all turned their heads, one after the other, to face the group. Then, a second later, the army rushed the raid group, weapons out as they practically floated across the ground toward them.
Noelle, Winter, Christina, walls up!
Nick ordered, and instantly, in unison, they began moving their hands as they performed the somatic gestures needed to manifest the icy barriers. The three women thrust their hands forward and began casting before three surges of magic almost simultaneously exploded outward, meeting the humid air with a hiss. The walls of ice, jagged and thick, erupted outward, instantly encasing each of the three directions to their sides and behind them as their ice magic created a walled-in tunnel leading straight toward the gap between the first set of buildings they needed to reach. As the walls of ice solidified, a shiver ran through the air, a tangible presence of raw magic. Noelle, Winter, and Christina stood in the center of their creation, their tired but proud faces etched with sweat trails.
That's mana depletion. Take the blue potions Topaz gave you and get those weapons out. Andrea, Daryl, you two are up next. Robert, get ready yourself,
Nick ordered as he watched the group push toward the first mob of soldiers rushing at them like starving dogs seeing meat. Even as Nick gave out the orders, he turned his head around, looking at the wall Christina had created behind them with a little unease. It was a double-edged knife, both a protection against the enemy circling around and flanking them and a barrier to any attempt at escape. However, it let them focus all their efforts on pushing forward as Nick's 15 guildmates, their weapons in hand, readied themselves to meet the threat. Half a dozen armored apparitions crashed weapon first into the guild's front line. The wall of shield users held fast, Spencer, Adele, Reggie, and Alan in the middle, Topaz, Noel, and Andrea on Nick's left, and Winter, Daryl, and Joe on his right. As one, they pushed forward easily. The defenders outnumbered the first set of monsters 10-6, leaving four of the melee fighters open to go on the offensive and destroy the undead threat in an instant before pulling back into the shield wall in a quick stab and retract maneuver. As the shield wall pushed forward, Sioa, Maria, Tabitha, Robert, and Christina hung in the back, waiting for their turn. Sioa was biting her bottom lip as she watched the next wave of monsters, 11 ghastly ethereal corpses charging at them.
Nice job, Guild! Keep it up! Maria, back up Topaz. Get your shield on her back and your spear over her. Keep those enemies off her, Nick ordered. Christina, you get behind Winter. Robert, support Alan. He looks like he's getting pushed back a little with the pressure building in the middle. Sioa, you're on the left flank. Don't let them overwhelm anyone. Tabitha, you take the right flank. Keep those zombies back.
They're not zombies,
Sioa corrected, even as she thrust her spear over Noelle's back and into the face of a ghostly apparition.
They're just specters.
Right,
Nick said, his eyes scanning the fight.
There's a break in the enemies. Push! Don't let them stop you from advancing. Right flank, careful! You're too far ahead of the left. Balance it out. That's it. Okay, advance again. Keep that pace. Good.
Nick, standard of greatness in his hand with the flag flying over them, continued to give out commands to his guildmates as they advanced. The weight of the enemy force pushed against them, building up in surges and nearly breaking through the line, but Alan, Spencer, and the others held up. Nick couldn't have been prouder as they finally reached the gap between the first set of buildings. He checked behind him just to make sure the ice walls were still intact even as they pushed through. As they reached the end of the road, having already killed and stepped over the corpses of at least 100 enemies, Nick saw an opportunity. He had been prepared to use both Andrea and Daryl to fill in the sides and keep their flanks safe, but with the distance between the buildings only being a few dozen feet, he decided to risk it.
Guys, we're going to push it. Sioa, Christina, let me know if either side gets overwhelmed. I'll be right there with you, Nick called out.
What if both get overwhelmed?
Sioa asked.
Then I'll just holy fire us the hell out of here,
Nick answered with a laugh, but he understood her concern. Even if he'd jokingly said that to ease the tension, he didn't know how much holy fire he could realistically produce with his limited mana.
Let's do it,
Sioa agreed.
Quick, before we get too swarmed.
Christina, for all her bravado and incredible expertise with her weapon, didn't seem very confident as she switched from spear to her much more familiar rapier, no longer needing to stab enemies over a companion.
Are you sure? We have the casters to—
You can do this, Christina,
Nick assured her before turning to the group, not giving her time to wallow in her doubt.
Advance!
As if he were waiting for the opportunity, the moment the group broke out of the alley, Nick sensed a deadly unliving aura, and he turned to see a large, ghostly knight in heavy armor come charging at them from the left flank on a war steed. Not only was the knight protected from head to toe in plate, but even the horse was barded, covered in plate with small spikes sticking out and a thick metal spike coming off its forehead like a unicorn's horn. Crap, Nick muttered under his breath as he tried to mentally piece together what to do. The knight with his lance and fully armored horse posed a far greater threat than anything Nick had run into in the dungeon so far. However, just as he was debating what to do, he saw Elizabeth act, rushing past Sioa as she flew across the ground right at the knight, blade in hand. The mounted warrior lowered his lance, pointing it at Elizabeth, but her speed was too great. She used her free hand to bat away the point before jumping into the air. Her blade left a glowing streak in the air as she stabbed the tip through a hole in the knight's visor, killing him instantly. She followed up with a swift push with her empty left hand, knocking the dead knight to the ground and sending his heavily plated body toppling over with a heavy thud as it kicked up dust on the ground. The riderless horse neighed in place, rearing up as Elizabeth, faster than Nick could follow, managed to turn around and jump into its saddle.
Sorry about interfering. I know we're just supposed to watch, but I wanted the horse,
Elizabeth said, patting the heavily barded steed that was still twisting and turning its head, uncomfortable with the new rider. This caused Mr. Walters to look at Nick with a what-can-you-do expression and shrug before avoiding his daughter's gaze.
Can we keep it? Can you take monsters outside the dungeon?
Elizabeth asked. Mr. Walters didn't look like he wanted to deal with the subject, but eventually answered,
I'm sure Nick knows a method, but we don't have the room in our yard for a beast that large.
Oh, that's fine. Nick's guild has plenty of grass and open space,
Elizabeth said, as if Nick would automatically allow a monster to live on his land.
Can we focus on the battle?
Nick asked, not sure how to handle the situation. The guild's shield wall was still holding up very well. The group had even made it to the next alleyway. But as he looked over, he saw that Arnold had helped Christina out, stealing a few kills in the process.
If she can kill something, I can too, he replied as he noticed Nick's glare. As soon as he finished talking, though, he had to brace as Elizabeth's magic medicine ball came hurtling toward him.
The mounted medicine ball maniac,
Siowa muttered with a sigh as she walked back to Nick.
I think we've got a bit of a breather.
No, we don't. Since you and Christina are well rested, I need you to cast an ice wall behind us, pop a mana potion, and swap out with Adele. Christina, you replace Topaz. She needs a bit of a breather, and we're going to need her canisters coming into the opening ahead. And Robert, you replace Alan, Nick replied, issuing the next set of commands. He wished the space between the buildings weren't so wide that he could do a full frontline swap to help with the strain of defending against wave after wave of undead. But the buildings were going to get closer, so they had to make do for now. The push continued. Like a Greek phalanx, their shields blocked the incoming enemies as their spears tore through the openings in armor, all while Nick continued to buff them from the back. Their path led to the clearing between the buildings and the temple at the center, where the long line of ghosts were still carrying corpses into the temple. Meanwhile, the new undead were still coming out and filling up the clearing. They began to organize their own ranks as they encircled the opening Nick's team was coming out of.
Freaking hell, Nick muttered, tempted to ask if Mr. Walters or the now mounted Elizabeth could help them. But he knew better.
He needed to solve this on his own. He just hadn't prepared to face off against row after row of armed and mobilized ghost soldiers. Their own advancing force, only a single line deep, wasn't going to be much of a match for them. Nick turned, checking out the ice wall behind him, as he thought about how long they could last if they got pushed back into the corner against their own frozen trap.
If we don't advance, they'll never run out of troops. If we do advance, we have to face that army,
Siowa remarked, stating the obvious as Nick tried to think about what to do.
Then there is no other choice left ahead of us, Nick said. We must do what we came to do, and prove our conviction with their ghostly blood.
Nick, just this once.
Siowa looked at him, her expression flat and stern as she stared at him in the eyes.
Use the cloak.
Nick, finally having permission to use one of the best abilities he had for the upcoming battle, nodded, gripping the standard of greatness tight as he stilled his mind and prepared the ability, Cloak of Madness. Chapter 12.
All right, Nick said, taking a deep breath as he prepared to use the skill. Does everyone here trust me to lead you through this battle? No matter what magic I have to do to make sure we all come home safely?
Yes!
Yes! Absolutely!
Definitely!
Everyone seemed to have replied in the affirmative except Reggie, who just shrugged.
I don't really care, so do whatever you're gonna do, boss. That's good. Because every bit of faith you have in me, I have in you,
Nick said, steeling his nerves as he took in mind their consent and began activating his pep talk ability and cloak of madness. Pep talk alone was already one of the strongest abilities he had. With the aid of his 179 charisma, it inspired all allies within 17.9 feet of him, improving all their stats and abilities by 35.8% for 179 seconds. However, the synergy between that skill and cloak of madness, which he had gotten from the Black Witch, quite literally doubled the abilities of pep talk, creating the new effect of improving everyone's abilities by 71.6% for 358 seconds. This effect was multiplied further by Topaz's stimulants and boosting potions, which doubled the strength and agility of the imbiber for a short period of time, and the standard of greatness, which improved their damage by 150% thanks to the 15 people affecting it. Combined, every spell now did 4.29 times the damage it would normally do, and every physical ability using strength or agility would do 8.58 times its normal damage. With nearly 10 times the damage on strength and agility skills, even their weakest members would be capable of easily destroying enemies with just their bare hands. Excited to see these incredible synergies manifest on such a perfect field of battle, Nick began to give his speech, the unmentioned requirement of both pep talk and cloak of madness.
I know the condition you all are in, Nick began. I know how long and hard you have been fighting today.
Since the moment we entered this dungeon, these bastards seemed endless, spread out across the land so we could not move in any direction without running into a pack of them. It must have ticked you off, being forced to put up with their ugly mugs and horrendous faces no matter which way you turned. But look ahead. Look at the present they have delivered to our feet. They think that this many of them is enough to defeat us. That it is the end of our dungeon dive. Our deathbed. But I tell you, it is victory. These bastards that tried to hound us to death at every step have done us the favor of all gathering in one spot right in front of us, gift-wrapping the completion of the quest and the end of the dungeon with a nice bow on top. And all we have to do is go unwrap our present. So let's not keep them waiting. Unleash everything you have! Break their ranks, crush their bones, and destroy the spirits of these unholy monsters! With that, Nick could feel the mana infused in every word that left his mouth covering his allies. It didn't matter how bad or awkward his speech was. It didn't matter that he rambled. What mattered was that he had 179 charisma and 2 magical abilities working like the ultimate plot armor to make them all believe his words. As Nick faced the undead horde, he could feel his 100-fold victor title kicking in, enhancing his stats as he faced the overwhelming number of enemies. Nick could also feel that a quarter of his mana had already left him. However, with 3/4 of it left, he decided to just burn it all while the effects of his skills were still in effect. With every ounce of mana that remained in his body, Nick channeled his righteous indignation toward the center of the undead monsters in front of him. To activate this summoning, he only needed to close his eyes for a moment as he recalled the hellscape that would creep across the beautiful hills of the world he loved, the endless hordes of dead bodies, and the cruel and twisted fate of his loved ones. He used the feeling that those memories dragged up, those images, that nightmarish world from his past life, to conjure forth his fury. The mana-fueled rage focused on the center of the enemy army. A moment later, a wrist-thick, bright white pillar of fire formed before exploding outward in all directions. Nick felt like the world had stopped for a moment as the pillar grew ever wider, seemingly clawing its way across the ground and into the sky above as the bright white light illuminated the world around them. The monsters caught in it barely managed to choke out short, high-pitched screams as the flames engulfed them, incinerating them on the spot. Nick couldn't deny that he took great joy in watching the monsters die in front of him, unable to take his eyes off the sight of it as dozens and dozens of soldiers incinerated in front of him, their screams being swallowed up as quickly as their flesh by the flames, the smoke from their ghastly, ghoulish bodies creating glowing green columns in the sky. As his mana ran out, his heart beat intensely from the strain that summoning that much holy fire at once put on his body. Then his focus became clear as his eyes took in the carnage around him. That one remaining spell Spencer had bragged about saving had gone off as quickly as Nick's pillar of fire. The mage had summoned a large nimbus cloud that moved forward through the enemy ranks, frying each monster it touched with small bolts of lightning. The others were starting to showcase their own abilities too. Maria had charged forth, her blade glowing orange as she created a wave attack that sent a wide orange crescent blade through the enemies. Meanwhile, Sioa had begun her spear dance. Before even reaching the enemies, she had already started to glow a little, a faint pink hue covering her body as her steps began to leave flowers in their wake. Then, as she reached the first enemy, thrusting out with her spear and stabbing him through his shield and chest at the same time, Nick could see the ethereal outline of a large cherry blossom tree forming over Sioa, its petals falling in all directions around her, each one exploding as it came in contact with a foe, shattering enemies into pieces before Sioa fell to the ground as well.
"What's going on? What's that move? Did she get hurt?" Nick panicked, rushing toward her side.
While he was running over to her, his movement was interrupted by the galloping of a horse in front of him that nearly knocked him to the ground as it came within inches of striking him. It was Elizabeth. She had given up the back line and was rushing toward the enemy army on her horse like a cavalryman performing his final charge. The massive beast jumped over the Daedalus Guild members and landed hoof-first into the enemy wave. As the heavy mass of the beast crushed one undead and knocked the others to the side, Elizabeth's sword began hacking at every foe she passed like a guillotine blade, repeatedly falling on anything that came close, slicing cleanly through skulls, necks, and chests with its powerful aura.
"Holy crap," Nick thought as he reached Sioa, picked her up, and looked around.
Everyone was firing off their abilities one after the other like video game characters using their ultimates in rapid succession.
and each ability, boosted, reinforced, and amplified, was so powerful that Nick was no longer wondering how long it would take for them to clear the enemy lines and break their ranks, preparing for the long slog, but how much of the village would remain after they were through. Even Arnold, who normally just carried around his purple sword, demonstrating the need for brevity with the blade as he would cut down his foes with clean, concise strikes, had not only joined the fray, but was showing off like he was trying to impress a girl as he performed a colorful aura blade tornado on the enemy. He was spinning so fast that Nick felt dizzy just watching him. He glided across the battlefield like a wild top of doom, slicing through everything that got in his way.
They were supposed to just be observers, staying on the sidelines to let you all shine, Mr. Walters remarked.
He looked more than a little upset as he put a hand over Sioa, restoring her vitality only for her to charge back out into the fight despite the stress she had put her body under with that last ability.
You called down the thunder! Now reap the whirlwind!
Christina, ever the StarCraft fan, yelled out as a pair of glowing wings appeared behind her before she lunged forward in a flash of white light that nearly blinded Nick and those around her. Her charge was followed by an explosion of ectoplasmic blood from the heavily armored Ghost Knight that had been in front of her, as his head rolled off his neck and fell to the ground along with the heads of a dozen enemies behind him. Christina herself, now in the midst of the enemies, flapped the giant wings, returning to her starting point in a moment.
That's it! Cover them all!
Nick could hear Alan crying out as he encouraged Topaz to continue firing canister after canister of gas into the crowd. After she was done, he fired off a device into the forming cloud. A moment later, every monster inside the fumes was electrocuted, leaving them sitting ducks for the others.
No restraint whatsoever.
Mr. Walters, who was the only one who hadn't gone battle crazy, noted in disapproval before turning his head to Nick. There was a long pause as Nick just stood there, holding the standard of greatness up to maintain its buff while the two of them watched the onslaught ahead of them.
You need to be careful. The ability to control a muscle is just as important as how strong it is.
I'll work on training them to show more control when we get back, Nick replied as he watched the onslaught. Even though they weren't showing any control, the sight of every single strike, stab, pierce, and flashy ability, all breaking their enemies to pieces, was beautiful to Nick, who couldn't divorce himself from his pure hatred of the monsters in front of him.
I don't mean them, Mr. Walters said, putting a hand on Nick's shoulder. I mean you. Your charisma is so high that your tongue has become as formidable a weapon as any sword. It has grown to the point that you are able to manifest your dreams and desires and those around you with ease. But it is clear you are not used to this. Despite your wealth, you do not conduct yourself with the subtlety of the rich. Instead, you carry yourself like a single father working two jobs, focusing on the essentials without concern for the nuances as you bulldoze through the tasks you wish to complete. This is no different than working out without being careful of your form, and it will have the same consequence one day if you carelessly put too much weight on the wrong part. One joint will break, and the whole body will be left hurting, unusable, without the ability to even command a fraction of the power the muscles have trained for day after day.
Nick understood what Mr. Walters was saying. It was clearer in this fight than in any other action before, so he could visualize the consequence Mr. Walters spoke of much better than normal as he watched his guild perform abilities that were overtaxing their bodies despite being in a large skirmish, where one would normally want to control their stamina so they wouldn't be tired out and overrun as the battle dragged on, but the words were still hard to grasp or accept. I think the single father did an amazing job, Nick said, sidestepping the weight and gravitas of the warning Mr. Walters had given him and instead pivoting toward a compliment. I don't think there are many adventurers outside of the top-tier guilds that could compete with either Lou, Elizabeth, or Arnold.
I had little to do with it, Mr. Walters chuckled. I barely had enough time to raise them at all. Their success is all theirs.
I'm sure they would say the exact opposite, Nick replied, joining in with the old man's chuckle before the two stood there in silence, watching the battle. While Nick had used Cloak of Madness with pep talk out of concern that the battle would be too hard otherwise, the moment Elizabeth, the horse-riding knight of destruction, and Arnold, the six-armed monster of the blade, had joined the fight, it had been as good as over. Without the buffs, they were already incredibly powerful adventurers, capable of fighting against a B-rank monster on their own. But with them, Nick wondered if they could handle an S-rank dungeon. The way they cleaned up the battlefield in minutes with the help of the Daedalus Guild was incredible.
"Don't forget my warning," Mr. Walters said, breaking the silence as the two watched the last undead die. "If you don't learn to control your charisma, you're going to get someone hurt."
"I'll remember it," Nick replied with a nod, promising to think about it seriously as he walked toward the victorious soldiers celebrating their overwhelming victory against the undead army. Chapter 13. The dust settled across the battlefield, and Nick found himself wading through an ankle-high pool of gross, greenish ectoplasm as he walked through the myriad corpses toward his victorious teammates. He ignored the viscous, coagulating ooze sticking to his sandaled feet as he trudged toward Siowa. Such carnage was familiar, but this time he was stepping over monsters instead of friends and colleagues. However, the scene brought back memories of the first great battle he had been in. He couldn't help but think about what the colonel in charge had told him back then, how losing one comrade was a tragedy that a man would struggle to bear, but that losing 1,000 was just another Tuesday you never spoke of at the canteen. That was just the nature of war, especially for the losing side, and the apocalypse, for Nick and those who survived, was nothing more than a never-ending war. "Well done," he said, pulling his thoughts back to the present as he congratulated the victors standing in front of the large temple.
"You think they'll come out and try to kill us?"
Siowa asked, referencing whoever was doing the summoning inside the building. Nick didn't know what entity was capable of performing such an act, as manifesting undead was often something that only liches or necromancers were capable of, both powerful users of the dark arts. But he knew they were a very real concern. Not only might they break out of the temple and try to slaughter his guild, but there was also the chance that they'd give up entirely, sacrifice their soul to some demonic being, and manifest a large specter or abomination in the process. "Well, if you ask me, I think we should break through the windows," Alan suggested. "I can trigger the drone to activate an explosion to blow the door down, and while they're looking at the door, we can take whoever is inside by surprise. Using the distraction, we can bust through the windows and murder the whole group."
"Forget that. I think it'd be better if we organize up into two teams around the back. We can enter through the temple's back rooms quietly, sneaking in. That way, we will have a better lay of the land, so to speak, when the fight starts, and we won't be caught off guard by whatever monster is being summoned inside,"
Siowa suggested, pointing at the back of the temple.
"There could still be monsters in that room, though," Alan said. "That's why we need the distraction."
"What about a simple, direct horsey charge?"
Elizabeth suggested, pointing at the front door to the building.
"You, young lady, are supposed to be an observer, making sure no one gets hurt as they complete their first raid. You will not be charging through the front doors into that temple to fight. You will stand back and only act when someone might get seriously injured. Only then, and not a moment before,"
Mr. Walters replied, quickly shooting down Elizabeth's plan as he shook his head.
"But, Dad, I have a horse,"
Elizabeth whined as she pouted at him like a 12-year-old. Mr. Walters shut down her pleas, saying,
"Not another word,"
leaving Elizabeth to sulk as she pulled her horse back a few steps, both seeming to be equally dissatisfied with his verdict.
"It's not like your idea is bad, though," Reggie remarked. "That doorway is just wide enough for five of us to defend shoulder to shoulder. We could play it like Greek hoplites with our spears, form up properly, and let Topaz draw them out with gas."
"Yeah, that's a great strategy,"
Winter complimented Reggie as she hoisted her shield and spear.
"I can handle the front line. Just watch."
"Why are you two acting like your plan is the best? Our tech boy here is absolutely correct. We can distract them, neutralize them while they're caught off guard, and then chase down and destroy any stragglers that run through the front. This is going to be a piece of cake,"
Christina argued, supporting Alan's idea. Adele frowned.
"I kind of feel wrong doing so much damage to a temple. I mean, even if they're monsters, this is a holy temple, and it just doesn't feel right."
"But killing them en masse is."
"Oh, that's that, and this is this. I still don't think we should wreck the temple. We can just open the front doors and go through that way,"
Adele answered, modifying Reggie's kick-down-the-door strategy to be less destructive. As Nick listened to all of these ideas, he was still thinking back to the apocalypse. When hell first broke loose, he had been idealistic like they were. He had thought about things from a dozen different angles as he stayed within the realms of acceptable warfare with the creatures. He had been the same as them. The temple would have been a place to enter, defeat the monster, secure the prize, and leave. Except, The apocalypse had taught him differently. "You're all wrong," he said, grabbing a nearby body as he pulled the sword from the undead soldier's hands and stuck it through the door handles, barring them closed. "You're not entering the temple at all. Instead, break down the buildings around us, take every bit of wood you can grab, and start sealing the doors and windows as best you can. We're going to lock them inside."
"Then what? Just go back knowing they can't escape? That's not going to solve the problem. That's valuable XP and loot in there,"
Alan pleaded, as if Nick didn't want to kill them but rather just lock them up.
"What do you mean?" Nick asked, raising an eyebrow at his friend.
"Who says we're leaving any XP behind?"
"Then what are you going to do?" Alan looked a little confused.
"We're going to burn the temple down with them inside. If any of them live through the fire and make their way out of the ruins, we'll finish them off then," Nick replied with a shrug, as if that were just the most natural answer ever.
"You're going to what?"
Noel seemed a little surprised by the unorthodox plan.
"Burn the temple. To the ground," Nick repeated, making sure each word was crystal clear for the whole group.
"That is how things work. We don't fight fair. If the monster is in a poisonous swamp, we blow it up. If the monster is in a dank, dark cave, we smoke it out. If the monster is in an underground labyrinth, we cave it in or sink the thing. The environment is your best weapon, and in this case, there are likely a bunch of fire-vulnerable, air-breathing necromancers inside a building that is conveniently made of one of the best substances to burn. Wood."
"I would like to point out that most of those examples you just gave involved using fire,"
Winter noted. Reggie nodded.
"That's true. You should have seen him in the forge. He loves the fire. I think he might be a pyromaniac."